Okay, good morning, everyone. All right, we're going to go ahead and start a few minutes into the 9 o'clock hour here. All right, welcome to our 9th week of class for Adult Christian Ed. And today I'm going to be talking about correcting your spouse. All right, so and just to be clear, some of you might notice that my spouse isn't here right now. And the reason she isn't is because she has worship music team practice. So I want to be clear, but not because of this subject. All right, so just to be clear, she'll listen later to the audio. So, last week we talked about resolving your conflicts. And today I want to talk about correcting your spouse. Next week I'm going to close off on it's called thinking about intimacy. So I need to think about how I'm going to think about that and teach it. So pray for me this week. But let me pray as we start. Father, thank you so much for this Lord's Day. Thank you for just a beautiful day today to gather as your people in Christ. I pray, Lord, that you'd bless all the teaching that happens today, the fellowship that happens, the interactions among the saints here at Cross Life. Lord, help us to truly glorify you in our thoughts and in our worship. And so, Lord, thank you. Help me, Lord, communicate today on correcting our spouses and what it looks like to be corrected and to receive correction and to give it. And so, Lord, give us a humbleness and gentleness of spirit. And I pray you would truly bless and be glorified in this teaching. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so today, correcting your spouse. There are three basic attitudes for conflict resolution. And again, as I mentioned last week, conflict resolution in the Bible, it's simply peacemaking. Okay, that's the idea of resolving conflicts is the idea of peacemaking, making peace. Okay, that's really the big theme of the New Testament in the sense of we have peace with God, and so He wants us to be at peace with each other, and obviously in our marriages. Okay, so there are three basic attitudes, and Ken Sandy talks about this in his materials, in peacemaking materials, but essentially there are those who are peace fakers, and peace fakers are in many marriages and in all over the world. Okay, we have peace fakers. Peace fakers are people who tend to want to avoid conflict and not resolve it. They tend to want to deny it. So it's a type of denial or avoidance. It can be represented by silence and just not wanting to talk. So there's peace fakers, avoidance, denial. Then there's also peace breakers. Peace breakers are fighters. Peace breakers are those who nag, who nitpick, who are looking for conflict in a marriage. They're just constantly trying to find problems, okay? That's a peace breaker. So you have peace fakers, you have peace breakers, and then of course, what is the one that pleases the Lord? Peacemakers, right? That's what the Lord wants from us, is to be peacemakers. So peace breakers, and peacemakers. Last week, I talked about the last one primarily, right? Peacemaking, how to be a peacemaker, how to resolve our conflicts. We talked about getting the log out of your own eye. Okay, that's what Jesus speaks about. You can't go and be reconciled with someone in Jesus' philosophy of peacemaking unless you have first examined yourself. Okay? Because otherwise, he says, you're a hypocrite. So, we talked about getting the log out of your own eye first, and then you go and be reconciled. And then that part of being reconciled, the last step is about forgiveness and actual forgiveness and healing. That's when the trash man actually drives away with your trash. Okay, it's been taken out. It's a done deal. It's gone. All right. So if you didn't listen to the audio for that, please check that out. It's on the website. But really, the process of peacemaking starts when each person moves towards kind of a repentance. Each person in the relationship moves towards a confession of their sins to God. Okay, when you get that log out of your own eye, that's when the peacemaking process can biblically legitimately start. Okay, it does not start simply when you go confront someone, because you, according to Jesus, you've missed a very significant step. You've missed self-examination. Right, and before that is what's the first G? Glorify God. So you have to start glorifying God, and then you move to get the log out of your own eye, and then you can move towards go and be reconciled in forgiveness. Right. So the peacemaking process starts when you confess your own sins to God, when you seek to be gentle and lowly and humble in heart. All right, and then you can go, and then you can examine the speck in your brother's eye, in the words of Jesus, right? So what happens after you confess your own sins? You've at least asked God in prayer, God, help me, give me wisdom, okay, as I go and confront my spouse. Matthew 7:5, look at what Jesus says in Matthew 7:5. This is near the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7:5, he says, "You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." All right, so I want this has to be really clear, all right? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. What does this last part mean? What does Jesus mean when he says, and then you will see clearly? Now notice, how many of you have had those eye boogers? I don't know what they're called.
Eye boogers.
Okay, or eye boogers, all right? Or if you have an eye condition, there's those eye conditions like you see like black things floating, you know? Okay, so if you have stuff in your eye, what do you need to do to see clearly? Take it out, okay? All right, so Jesus is not teaching the rock and science here, right? So he's talking to very common people here. And some of his disciples were not some of the brightest people. All right, so he says, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly. In other words, Jesus is assuming if you don't assess yourself first, you don't have a good picture of what's really happening. You can't see the relational problem going on. Okay. Okay. So, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye, or your wife's eye, or your husband's eye. Okay. Now, what does that last part mean? Then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. He's talking about confrontation. Okay. He's talking about practically going up and addressing an issue face to face with someone. In this case, your spouse, right? So that means to go and talk with your spouse, right? Talk about a problem. It's not a confrontation is not a bad or naughty word, okay? It just simply means you're ready to go now. Jesus says, you've prepared yourself, now go, right? Be a peacemaker. And so Jesus affirms the need for confrontation at the end of 7:5, Matthew 7:5. All right. And so it's necessary in a fallen world that we live in, it's necessary. Confrontation is necessary, right? And it's actually part of a healthy relationship because we're going to have problems, right? Please remember that this person who is now ready to go clearly see the situation and address the speck in his spouse's eye or brother's eye, okay, this person has been humbled. This person is ready to go. Jesus does not want you, I'm going to close on this part later, does not want you to address problems if you're not ready. Okay? He's very clear. Otherwise, he says, you hypocrite. You're going to go look at someone else's problem, but what about you? Okay? And we said it before, even if you're only 1% at fault, you've got to own up to 100% of it. Jesus simply wants you to be prepared. He wants your heart to be settled and reasonable and gentle. All right? And that's a difficult thing. We all know. Even married, you know that's a difficult thing. Okay? And so remember, this person has been humbled. This person has looked at the log in his or her own eye. This person is not going angry or resentful or bitter or wanting vengeance, okay? Or to get their argument across. Okay, I think this is how, I'm just throwing, I don't know, this is not accurate, but it feels like it's like 95% of marriages address problems like this, right? With anger, with bitterness. When you've reached the tipping point, now I go. And that is why so many marriages struggle, because of the way they go about healing is wrong. It's not biblical. Okay? The Bible helps. It never hurts in the ultimate sense of helping us. Okay? And so our hearts have to be right with God first if we're going to go and be right with our spouse. Okay, so we tend to go straight to each other, right? If at all. Some couples just stew in bitterness and resentment and silence. But others oftentimes will simply go at each other without humbling, without thinking how we played the part in the conflict. Like what got us to this point? Like what was said? How could I have reacted differently? You know, like what's going on? Now, if it was a harsh word that was said and you haven't talked about it yet, then yeah, you just think like, Lord, I'm hurt by this and I feel like I need to go into... The point is though, be ready, be gentle and ready, because you want healing. You don't want more fighting. Okay. And so Jesus is very clear. He starts by saying, we are hypocrites if we don't prepare ourselves. Okay, prepare our own hearts. And then he assumes that as you go, you will extend grace and kindness, just as God has extended mercy and kindness to you in reconciling with you. Okay, so there's always the vertical pattern and priority. All right, and so once you have prepared your heart, the aroma for biblical confrontation is set. The table is set. Okay, for Jesus at least, he says you're ready to go. Okay, if you're not ready to go, then you're not ready to go. Right. So when someone has prepared, and this is in the notes, when someone has prepared him or herself, first with self-examination, now the relationship can move toward healing. Okay. There should be, there must be a humility and a gentleness about marital confrontation. All right. You ought not wait till both of you are exploding. Okay. And I'll say a few practical things about that when you're at that point a little later on. But let me just cover, that's kind of my intro. Let me just cover 5 points this morning. And some I'm going to move really quick, like point number one. The first one is, there is a need for truly loving and humble confrontation. Okay. I touched on this just now, but a little bit. But there is a need for truly loving and humble confrontation. There's not a need for simply confrontation. There's a need for loving and humble confrontation. In a truly loving relationship, like our Christian marriages ought to be, our love for each other requires the hard work of removing the splinter or the speck in your spouse's eye. It does require it. Okay? Peace faking doesn't work. Avoidance and denial does not work. It does not help the marriage. And neither does peace breaking. Someone who nags and nitpicks and attacks the spouse regularly. Okay, there must be loving confrontation. Proverbs 27:6. This week I put almost all my scripture verses in the notes, so if you look at they're there. So Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Okay, think about that. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. It hurts when your sin gets addressed, right? And so the truth is, there is no one that knows me better than my spouse. Like, nobody knows me better than Terry, apart from God, okay? And probably it's the same for you, okay? Almost guaranteed. All right. Unless, you know, you've been married, you know, a week, and maybe your parents know you better, okay? But you know what I mean, all right? That's the reality, is that your spouse knows you better than anyone else, especially over time, okay? And so no one is more better suited to confront you and address your sin than who? Than your loving spouse, okay? The one who has examined him or herself is able to confront you. There's no one better to do the job. So I think in a Christ-centered marriage, each spouse should be correcting the other with a humble and a loving confrontation. When necessary, oftentimes things should be overlooked, okay? I'm going to mention just a few examples of when they can't be overlooked, okay? But we have to believe this about our spouse, okay? We have to believe, hey, I'm in a Christian marriage. My spouse is not perfect. I'm not perfect. But if he or she's bringing something to me, if Terry's bringing something to me, now I do know, after the years that we've been married, she almost always she's thought through it, okay? She doesn't do it perfectly. I don't do it either, okay? But she's thought through it, and I need to listen, right? Because there's nobody better to address me than her, right? It doesn't mean that others can't, but she knows me best, and your spouse knows you best. Okay, so we have to believe that there's a good motive, that there's a godliness in this confrontation of me, right? When my spouse confronts me. So first thing, there truly is a need for loving and humble confrontation. Number two, spouses, please affirm each other. Please affirm each other. I think it was last week or the week before, I mentioned Sam Crabtree's book, Practicing Affirmation. Practicing Affirmation. It's a wonderful book, something the church desperately needs today, our marriages need today. I know Terry recently read it, and one of my girls just finished reading it the other day. but practicing affirmation. And Crabtree says this: we listen best to the people who affirm us the most. We listen best, in other words, we receive even criticism, right? Best to the people who affirm us the most. So the point right here is spouses, please affirm each other. Okay, I mean by words primarily, all right? The flip side is also true to that, right? We listen best to the people who affirm us the most. We tend to just become bitter and reject and close our ears to people who constantly criticize us, don't we? Who criticize us the most. So that the flip side is also true. Okay, we tend to shut out after, especially after it goes on and on, we just like, no more, right? But Crabtree uses this analogy in this book, Practicing Affirmation. And the analogy goes like this: affirmation is like making a deposit in your bank, in the bank of your relationship. And criticism is like making a withdrawal. And so this is how it plays out. When we criticize a lot more than we affirm, using the bank analogy, our relationship becomes overdrawn and people become unreceptive to rebuke. So he uses that picture of affirmation is putting a deposit. Criticizing is doing a withdrawal. And way too often we're doing withdrawals and we're in the red. Like we're just under, okay? And we're overdrawn. And the relationship tends to fall apart, okay? Why? Because we're not affirming, okay? We just assume, hey, if things are going good, I'll just ignore it. But when things are bad, I'll blast the AV team, right? That's how it is with AV. You know that, right? AV gets no credit. Everything, you just assume it's always gonna be good. If it's bad, hey, you know, everybody knows where to look. So that's how sometimes how it is in our relationships. Maybe you've experienced this. Maybe you're in this place right now. Maybe you've experienced this in the past. Okay, the years go by, and it seems harder and harder to affirm, to encourage your spouse. And I think I think these days, especially with the popularity and the influx of social media and amazing teaching on biblical marriage and conferences and seminars and podcasts and all that stuff, and right. A lot of Christian wives have heard so much about, wow, my husband's supposed to look like this, right? They hear so much stuff on the ideal man, right? There's a book that is a great book called What He Must Be If He Wants to Marry My Daughter, okay? Our wives are inundated with all this ideal picture of Christ, and my husband's supposed to look like that. And the reality is she gets let down. Right, my wife gets let down when she looks at, wow, what he's supposed to be, and we can't live up to that. We can't live up to that scrutiny, and sometimes these wives can become bitter and angry and resentful, and won't encourage or affirm their husband because you don't do any of this, or you do 10% of that, right? But husbands can be similar. They can treat their wives similar. Right? Husbands get used to the marriage relationship. It's normal. It's ordinary. Work, eat, sleep, take care of the kids week after week after week, right? If nothing is said, everything's just going well, everything's great, right? I don't say anything, but only when something's bad, then I'll criticize her, bring correction. So both spouses can get really discouraged and the marriage can deteriorate, especially over time when this stuff isn't taken out to the trash can, right? We're not addressing it, and so we're not gathering the trash and putting it in the trash bin and taking it out, letting the trash man take it away, right? We just let it, the trash just build up in the house. And so neither party can meet the other's expectations or measure up. And Crabtree rightly says in this book, Practicing Affirmation, he says, one of the most effective ways to break this downward spiral in marriage is to actually affirm one another, okay? Start to find things to praise and give encouragement. Affirmation is a powerful tool in your hands. One of the things I've asked struggling couples over the years when I've met with them, as they're in this downward spiral or this stalemate, in the midst of conflict and tension, I've asked each one, okay, this is what I want you to do for homework. I want you to, on your own time, separate time, okay, not together, just do it separately. I want you just to write down just three things that you admire about your spouse, okay? I know you're having tension right now, but I want you to think about three things that you admire about your spouse. I know you can do it, okay? And just like I mentioned last week about the first one to admit fault, and then suddenly the temperature drops, right? When you're having tension, one person goes, "I'm really sorry. I didn't realize. You know, I should have done better on this." And you know, suddenly you hearing that go, "Wow," right? The temperature just goes down, doesn't it? Okay, please forgive me. Right, thermometer drops a little bit. There's kindness in the air. Just like that, when a spouse shares one or two or three things he or she appreciates or admires about the other, the conversation suddenly changes. It always does. Okay. Oh, the wife says, "Oh, I didn't know that you thought that about my cooking or you know, my driving." I don't know. Okay. All right. That makes me feel really nice. Right? Affirmation is a powerful tool. It helps to bring down the temperature, bring some sensibility, and even mercy and grace. So the power of words aptly spoken. Okay, so affirmation is something we see throughout the Bible. God speaks in the very beginning in Genesis, in the creation account. What does God say? He created and he said it was good. Right? That's a type of blessing. That's a type of affirmation. Okay, he creates Adam and Eve. It is good. It's good. Right? In the book of Proverbs, you have chapter 31, you have the excellent wife, right? And you have the husband and you have the children. They rise up to bless her. And the husband says, "Among all these noble daughters, you excel them all." Right? Words of blessing to his wife. The children rise up and bless their mom. Okay? And in the New Testament, you have, what is the most flawed church in the New Testament? Anybody know? The most, take this appropriately, disgusting church. Corinthians. Right? There were some nasty things going on in the church, right? Pretty unbelievable. Okay. And even to that church, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 4 to 8, Paul finds stuff to say about them that's good. He finds it. Okay, he's gonna blast them later. Okay. But he gives God so much thanks for the grace of God in their midst. Okay? And he says, in your speech, and how your testimony of Christ, and other things in verses 4 to 8. So Paul found things to deeply affirm this flawed group of people and sinful people. He saw what was good, and he made it known with his mouth. Right? By the way, we can do this with our kids better too, just as a quick aside, affirmation. So we see the same thing in Revelation. You see this in the letters to the churches, chapters 2 and 3. Okay, the seven churches, Jesus often begins with an affirmation and then he rebukes them, all right? But he at least finds good to say, okay, even though they have problems. All right, so we could look at other places in the scripture for affirmation, but the point is that in our marriages, rather than holding our spouses to certain ideals and high expectations of what you heard some conference speaker say, okay, yeah, we should pursue that, absolutely. Right. Or, you know, simply going, "Oh, I'm let down again by my spouse," or "I'm feeling bitter." Right. Look for the good. Right. Start with yourself by looking for the good in the other. You can at least do that. And that should be part of the self-examination process. Have I affirmed more than I've criticized? Right. Do I have a critical spirit about this? Yeah, my spouse is not perfect. They're doing things that probably aren't very good for our relationship, but can I find things that are good in my flawed spouse? Just like Paul does throughout his letters. Just like Jesus does to the seven churches in Revelation. All right. So look for good to verbally praise any of God's grace in your spouse. Okay, any kind of effort you see them doing. I promise you, if you look for good, you're going to find it. You will find good if you look. Okay, and then you can praise and you can affirm and make that deposit into your relationship and let that interest accrue and let it build up, you know, deposit after deposit. Stop making so many withdrawals in our relationship. It hurts. Okay. You're going to find your marriage growing in grace and kindness and even friendship. Okay. So practice affirmation. If you pick up that book, it's not a super thick book. It's a great, great book. Maybe read it together. Read it on your own. Okay. And I think one of those things is that it's important to know if you want to confront your spouse, if you're going to be confronting your spouse, if the general aroma is one of affirmation, then your spouse is going to know that you are coming from a place of like, this is a serious concern. you know that I encourage you and affirm you, but I have a, this is something I have to address, right? Instead of you're always criticizing me, and now here's another one on top of it. Okay, and that just, it's hard to hear that. And so Proverbs 16:21, the wise of heart is called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. Sweetness of speech increases your persuasiveness, right? There's a reason why scripture says that. It's because affirmation does a lot more good than criticizing, right? Again, confrontation is necessary, but set the stage with self-examination and affirmation generally in your life and marriage, okay? Be sure to make grace and affirmation more of the norm, okay? So that the times of confrontation will be received a little bit better. Okay. Number three, don't correct or confront every issue. Do not correct or confront every issue. No healthy marriage or relationship can work if every fault is confronted. Can you imagine that? Think about it. Every selfish act by your spouse, every insensitive word, you're going to call them on it. That is not going to work. Okay. How much time would you have if you confronted every single situation in your life? You would have very little time for anything else, right? So that would not be healthy at all, okay? Hey, you didn't say hi to me, you know, or why did you drink all the Coke Zero? You know, like constantly just nagging about every little detail in your life, okay? I've said stuff like that. So hey, how come the toothpaste is uncovered? So now everybody in our family has their own toothpaste. I'm not kidding. Okay. So Jeremy has his own toothpaste. That's good. It helps when you're sick too. So right? Everybody has their own toothpaste. So we don't touch each other. It's all right. But in every marriage, both spouses have to often overlook one another's faults. Okay. Sins. You have to overlook sins. You have to overlook wrongs. Okay? It should be pretty normal in a healthy marriage to do this and to simply say nothing about it. Okay? Because your spouse is doing that for you too. You have to assume that, right? 1 Peter 4:8, he says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Okay? Proverbs 19:11, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Okay, the one who is slow to anger has a soberness and a good sense about them, a reasonableness. Hey, I'm a sinner too. I do things to annoy also. Okay, I'm not going to nitpick and nag. But he also says, it is a glory of a man to overlook an offense. We should be overlooking regularly. It glorifies God. It's healthy for relationship. Okay, just as God has been slow to anger with you, as God has shown constant grace to you, we should treat our spouses the same. Okay. We should all be glad that God does not discipline us for every single time we sin, because he'd be disciplining us constantly, right? Every thought we have, every deed we do, whatever, okay? One by one, that would be a hard life. Okay, so don't confront or correct every single issue, okay? Most things in daily life need to be overlooked in a regular marriage, okay? And simply moved on from. Okay, now, there are sins that have to be addressed and cannot be overlooked. Love demands this also, right? If your spouse is doing something spiritually dangerous, you have to step in, and in the words of James 5:19-20, which we'll look at next week to finish off James, if your spouse is doing something spiritually dangerous, you have to go in and rescue them. That's the language of James, okay? That's confrontation, okay? If your wife is shoplifting, okay, from a store, or she's gossiping to others, a loving husband will step in. Hey, this has to stop, right? Okay? If a husband is looking at websites he shouldn't be looking at, and it's not only men these days, but if it's a husband's looking at websites he shouldn't be looking at, or he's cussing out the kids regularly, right? The loving wife must confront. Usually, the issues that need to be confronted are more serious in nature. That should be pretty obvious. Okay, things that are going to truly affect the marriage negatively, hurt the marriage. It's going to bring disrepute to the name of Christ. Okay, things like that. But I think the wise husband, the wise wife, is going to know, okay, this needs loving confrontation. This can be overlooked, right? And if a spouse needs counsel on whether he or she should address it or overlook it, talk to someone godly that you respect. Talk to a loving brother if you're a guy, a loving sister if you're a girl. Just share with one person, hey, I need some input. Please make sure you choose someone who you know is trustworthy, who can keep confidence, right? And say, hey, or talk to a pastor and just say, hey, you know, I just need a little wisdom here. And but keep the circle as small as possible, right? Okay, so number 4 out of 5, how to gently restore and lovingly confront. How to gently restore and lovingly confront. How do you actually go about confronting each other? This is a really important thing. Okay, before anything, please pray. Okay, start with prayer. Start going before God. Okay, go to the Lord, ask him for help. You can even ask him specifically for these things. God, I need your help. I need humility. Okay, I need guidance. I need help. I need humility. I need guidance. Please help me, right? Think about what you want to say and how you will say it. Okay, don't just go and blast your mouth. Think about it first, right? Think, how can I communicate respectfully? Okay, how can I glorify God with this? How can I go with good intentions? Okay, because in your heart, you believe this is a serious issue to address, right? Think about the best timing of it. Okay, don't do it when your spouse is starving, just steps in the door from work, is really tired, or you're maybe has been dealing with the kids all day. Don't try to use a little wisdom, okay? So think about timing. Or super late at night. Those are probably not the best times, okay? So timing is important. Galatians 6:1. If you guys can look at that, it's also printed in your notes. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you be tempted too. So notice that there's always this going back to yourself. Hey, be careful about yourself too, right? Examine yourself. But notice that if anyone is caught in transgression, any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Okay, all together now. Let's say it together. That word. 1, 2, 3.
Gentleness.
Okay? Huge thing. Yeah, okay. So this is a key passage for confronting your spouse. Galatians 6:1, okay, along with the words of Jesus, Matthew 7. The first thing is to make sure that the wrong is truly a sin. It's not just doesn't annoy you, right? But it's truly a sin that this person has actually wronged God. Okay, this is a transgression. Galatians 6:1. What is a transgression? It's to go against God's law. It's to cross the boundary of what's acceptable before God. Okay, it's a sin. So they're not breaking any law of yours. They're breaking God's law. Okay, so make sure the sin is against God and not simply something that annoys you, even though that may need to be talked about. Okay, but we're talking about in here truly biblical confrontation, right? Okay, so Paul says here the person is in sin, caught in a trap, like an animal caught in a trap. Remember, both of you are sinners, and so you know what it's like to be tempted and caught in a snare as well. You know that. Okay, so you need to show grace, right? You know what it's like to be ensnared in a sin. So you should be gentle, you should be sympathetic, not harsh, because you know you also have fallen before God in similar ways, right? So make sure the correction process is one for restoration and not simply passing judgment, right? Paul uses the word restore. If you look at verse 6:1 here, Galatians, you who are spiritual should restore him. In the gospel accounts, if you look at, for example, Matthew chapter 4, the word restore is the same word used for mending nets, for fishing nets, for mending them, okay, to bringing them back to fully working order. Okay, so that's what the idea is. It's to restore, it's to bring back to health, to fully functional working order. So it's not for judgment, okay, restoration. Too many spouses confront when they've simply had it, right? Or when they can't take it anymore, they're filled with anger and rage. And Paul says, no, that is not going to work. Jesus says the same thing, right? It's not going to work. Okay, there has to be a spirit of gentleness. It's not going to work if you go with a spirit of anger. The goal of confrontation is to restore your spouse to God, bring harmony in the marriage relationship. Okay. Notice also Paul says that you must be spiritual. You must be spiritual. Yeah, this means that everything that Paul has talked about right before Galatians 6:1, Galatians chapter 5 is all about what? The works of the flesh and the fruit of the... That's what it is to be spiritual, to walk in the Spirit, to have the fruit of the Spirit. Okay? You must be spiritual. That's a similar idea of Jesus, Matthew 7:5. Okay? Look at the log in your own eye. Prepare your heart. Be humble. Be gentle. Self-examine. Okay? I can't emphasize this enough because we skip this all the time in our marriages. We do not think about this. We think, they hurt me, I'm going to get them. Okay? I'm going to defend myself and attack. And that's why it's not working, guys. Right? Because we're not doing it the biblical way. Right? Too much of marital confrontation is fleshly, destructive, bursts of anger, everything that he talks about in Galatians 5:20. Okay? It's the works of the flesh. Okay? He talks about biting and devouring one another in Galatians 5:15. Same context. Okay? It's a true but sad picture of marriages all over the place. Fighting, arguing, defending, attacking, biting, devouring. Everything you read about Galatians 5. Okay, where is the fruit of the Spirit in our confrontation, right? So to confront your spouse, you must be spiritual. That's a huge precondition, okay? You who are spiritual, if you're not, stop, okay? Because you're not going to have a spirit of gentleness. Is gentleness a fruit of the Spirit? Yeah, it is. So is self-control. So is patience, right? So is love and kindness and peace and joy, right? So let me make this clear, and I'll close off with my fifth and final point, be pretty quick on that. If you are sinfully angry, do not confront your spouse until you are right with the Lord. Okay? Notice the priority. Right with the Lord first. Okay? Do not go to your spouse until you have done the serious and humble work of self-examination, prayer, asking Christ for help. Okay, that you've thought about the words, what you want to say and how you're going to say it. Okay? And only then, when you can honestly say, I'm in a better place right now, I am spiritual right now, okay? Then you're walking in the Spirit, showing His fruit, then you go. Otherwise, you better really take that moment to get the log out of your own eye and just stop for a moment, okay? Something else, just want to advise, if your interaction with your spouse is becoming harsh, it's becoming aggressive, hard words are being said, just agree in advance, just beforehand, that you just gonna both take a break. When you start feeling the temperature rising and words getting a little bit out of hand, just stop. Okay? Just agree beforehand that you're just gonna go take a break. You guys are gonna go separately. Promise, you know, just assume, agree before you're gonna separate and pray for a moment and, you know, be on your own and ask for help and gentleness. It's not gonna do any good if you try to build a confrontation on fleshliness and aggression. It's just not gonna work. Okay. Finally, receive correction humbly. Receive correction humbly. Receiving correction, being confronted, it is very hard, isn't it? Okay. I don't like it in my marriage. It still bothers me, still unsettles me. Okay. Sometimes I think, what did I do this time? Like, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes we think that, don't we? Okay. And yet ultimately, the way we receive it is not my spouse's problem. It's my problem. Okay, how I receive something, how I respond, how I react—that's my responsibility. I can't blame anybody else. Okay, listen to Proverbs 9:8. Last verse I'm going to quote. Proverbs 9:8: Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Now, you have to think about this verse. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Now, okay. Try to maybe memorize this. Think about this for your marriage or there are other times, maybe someone else at work or a friend confronts you about something. Will you scoff and defend yourself every time someone tries to correct you and think, you have faults too, right? Or will you be wise and gentle and lowly and humble and receive correction and think, I should appreciate this person. I should love this person. That's what the last part says. It says, reprove a wise man, and he will love you. So if your spouse is reproving you, rebuking you, correcting you, a wise person is going to go, yeah, thank you for doing that. I know you have good in your heart for me, right? That's very hard to say. But the godly one will say that. The humble one will say that, right? Okay? Because they're trying to do the hard work of rescuing you. They're trying to do the hard work of removing the speck from your eye. Okay? So, yeah, we don't do it perfectly. Okay? We don't correct perfectly. We shouldn't expect that. But we can do our part and receive the correction in humility and consideration of what's being said, and at least say, okay, thank you for sharing that. I'll think about what you said. Right? Honestly, that's been very helpful to Terry in our relationship. In our 22 plus years for us, is me simply saying, I'll think about it. Right now, I don't agree with it, what you're saying about me, but I promise to think about it. And that usually will very satisfy her. She'll say, that's why I appreciate that. Just think about that. I said, okay, you know. And so usually that's been very helpful for us. And then we'll talk about it again, right? Okay, so reprove a wise man and he will love you. Will you be able to love that person who reproves you? Will you be a wise person, right? Okay, if we can just all focus on having a spirit of gentleness, both husbands and wives, I think it'll make all the difference in the world and in our marriages. Any questions? All done. Any questions at all about correcting your spouse? A lot of it is preparation work, guys. It really is. Because we just go right into the battle without doing any preparation, right? We go right into the battle without going to med school. Okay, we just throw me and I'm ready to just do surgery, right? No, you've got to prepare. It's all preparation, right? It's preparing the heart. So think about that in your marriages, right? At least think about fruit of the Spirit. Think about gentleness. Think about self-examination and humility. Listen to Gentle and Lowly. It's a wonderful song. Right? And try to think, how can that look more like that in my life so I can be more like Christ? Any questions? Anything? Okay, some questions if you want to study on your own or discuss with your spouse on your notes. Also, what issues in your marriage need to be overlooked more? Maybe you're nitpicking. Maybe you're nagging just a little bit too much. And that's something you need to examine, right? And then which ones need more loving confrontation? What are some issues that are maybe more serious that you're overlooking that shouldn't be overlooked? Like, it could be damaging to your relationship. It can be hurting the children. Okay. It can be influencing the wrong way. Okay. Number two, why is biblical affirmation important? Why is biblical affirmation powerful? Number three, how should you prepare yourself before correcting your spouse? Right? Maybe just go home and practice it. Sit before the Lord. Lord, help me to understand how to prepare myself. Right? Both of you do it, your marriage will go it'll be fantastically better. Number four, what are some things you can say or do if your spouse confronts you in a fleshly way? Okay? What can you say or do if you can tell your spouse is very angry and aggressive and doesn't have a heart of humility? What can you say or do in gentleness, right? Also. Okay, I think we're done. So thanks. We'll see you guys in Sunday worship in just a few minutes. Next week, you can come out in intimacy. All right.